When you fight and you fight and you fight a man down only to give up a late own goal, it's That's So MLS. With myself, Nick Thornton, and with me as always and back from the Big Apple is Andrew Bates.
Hello, how are you doing, Nick?
I'm good. No, I am good. I am good. You know what? I'm good. Decidedly so. How are you?
I'm good. I was, as you said, in New York for 6 days. It was a wonderful 6 days with what at the time, I don't know how it came across on television, but it was the best you could really hope for as a result. The Whitecaps game away in New York, and overall just a wonderful little adventure.
Awesome. Yeah, I somehow forgot that you were there until about halfway through the game. And then I was like, oh, wait a second, this is a good game to be at. And I guess it's the Whitecaps are a funny team like that because we've said a few times now that the team they were up against next was just going to rip them apart. First in Minnesota, who's been in form, and then we beat them 4-2. And then in New York City FC, who's been so good all season long, and we somehow come out of New York with a point. Mm-hmm. I also believe they have not lost at Yankee Stadium this season.
Well, I mean, the White... who hasn't?
New York City FC.
Yes.
And I believe up until that game had only conceded 4 goals there.
Yeah, and you know, they did look quite strong. I got a firsthand look at the, you know what, you're quite right. It's still their home record is still 10 wins, 2 draws, 0 losses. And they did look strong the whole time, and I think that the Whitecaps did have some chances in the second half, but for stretches it did seem like New York was in more control.
Absolutely, but I mean, I think this is one of those tricky games where Carl Robinson has been under such fire, including from us.
Yeah.
But proves at times that tactically he can get it right. And people were accusing him early on of putting out sort of a B squad in New York City. But the way that they played and the types of plays that were made by those players, you honestly sort of feel like those were the only players that could have made that happen. Mm-hmm. And we've seen it happen before where Hurtado can have some late game heroics coming on as a super sub. And I honestly, I didn't see that game changing significantly without his contribution.
No.
And then again, he was the difference maker, or at least was until the dying minutes at the Canadian Championship as well. So
you sent me this wonderful tweet about Hurtado Island, which is a reference to sort of the idea of somebody that is on one person's constantly promoting one player, despite the fact that everybody else has left them alone on the island.
I did.
Was that not you?
I think that might have been somebody else smarter.
Right. Well, it wasn't. It was a tweet. It was a tweet. But I love the. I can't remember who was telling me about Hurtado Island. But Hurtado Island had a heck of a party this week.
Hurtado Island, I think, broke off the continent and formed his own little island nation. No, and he's been good, and I'm glad that I think people in the know, people who follow Vancouver do know. I know From the Backline podcast has talked about this here in Vancouver, that Hurtado was a very serviceable striker and is there in a pinch. Is he going to play every game? Is he going to hit every shot? No, but, you know, the other thing that, aside from the wonderful goal that he scored in New York City, which is just a nice little volley that he didn't think too hard about, but just smashed in. And then another great strike from a ball over the top from Tiber, is that his game has changed. He's gotten a little smarter, and he was always a strong player, a physically present player on the pitch. But now we see that he's got this finishing side to him that he's really beginning to polish. And arguably also should have won a foul before we scored an own goal that gave Toronto the go-ahead lead last night in the Canadian Championship. But the story here to me is that you've got this kid in the wings that is actually putting some pressure on the other strikers now and beginning to make a bit, not a bit, beginning to make a good case for himself of starting over Blondell. If you're going to be looking for a sub for Kamara, okay, Hurtado doesn't have the height, but he brings something different that, you know, the league doesn't have a good look at him and they don't quite know what to do with him.
This sounds like damning with faint praise, and it kind of is. But I think that an important part of a squad is a player who is sort of, you know, you always want like creative players, you want playmakers, you want players with a great pace, and you want players that can add something different. But there is a benefit to having like a straight ahead classical striker in your lineup. When people talk about what, and this is the faint praise part, when people talk about value over a replacement player, not to say that Hurtado is like a bench, is a replacement player, but he is kind of a benchmark, and it's useful to have that sort of player come in where if you have a striker that can occasionally be less than reliable, as the Whitecaps have had in their time, that you have a reliable striker that you can count on to be that person to come in at any moment.
When I think last season I made the point and I got called out for it by saying that, you know, Hurtado had as many goals as Alphonso Davies with half the minutes. And rightly so, somebody took me to task being, well, they're different positions, different types of players and all that. But when you think about what we're comparing Hurtado against, is he's actually, he has a good production record. He doesn't play a ton. And maybe there's an argument for why he shouldn't. But at this point, I go, like, I feel like he's pretty quietly silenced his critics that there's a reason why he's been on the team since 2014 or 2013 and has gotten better over that time. It hasn't been some sort of meteoric rise, and he hasn't turned into the talisman striker, and I don't think that he will either, at least with our team. But the point is, when he's given his chance over the last 18 months, he's taken it. And he's won us some crucial points. He did it in Kansas last year. He did it in New York City this year, where other players couldn't. So regardless of how you feel, I'd just say the proof is in the Hurtado Island pudding.
The game was fun to attend. I have to say that both the club, New York City, and the supporters were very nice to us, our little band of traveling folks. Mm-hmm. Yankee Stadium, we've talked a little bit about being weird before, and I'm not.
Yeah.
And I want to say everybody did their nicest before I go and critique their home. I want
to
say
this is the part I'm fascinated to learn about, is what is it like to watch soccer in a baseball stadium?
Okay, so the operative word is empty. This isn't a bag on the Red Bulls attendance, which is the New York City's attendance, which was, I think, like just a hair over 20,000, which I think, you know, the numbers are trending up, but I think 19,000 to 24,000 is like a pretty rock solid good MLS attendance. You know, mm-hmm. I think it's a great sort of intimate audience. But because Yankee Stadium is so huge and they don't open that upper deck, and not only is it so huge, but there also isn't like because the Timbers Stadium was originally a baseball field, if I'm not wrong. But it is a little better in terms of in some of the sight lines, like some of the, not the sight lines, but some of the parts of it, like where video boards are located and stuff, you can still kind of see that influence. But there isn't like a lot of space because the home field is like the home plate is covered and the pitcher's mound are both covered and visible. Like, The baseball field shape is all still there. And so we were sat in sort of the first deck behind home plate, which is like directly opposite to where the supporter sections were. And the supporter section appeared to have a really great, I wasn't able to see if there were seats, if it was standing or not, but like they were making a lot of noise and it was good. But there's just so – the stadium is just so roomy and it doesn't have it doesn't really have roofs, or like at least on the far side in the outfield, especially. Mm-hmm. Like it doesn't hold the sound in, and the grass, like the issue of having home field be there from like, and this is nerdy, but like a theatrical perspective, you know, it's just distracting. It's just room place that isn't being used and is always there for you to look at.
Well, and the thing that I hadn't quite really caught on to for all my criticism of the pitch is that they basically just lay turf over a bunch of dirt. And so there's actually a whole side of the pitch that moves when you stand on it or when you run on it. Because it's not actually rooted to anything, which is just like, it's kind of phenomenal to think about in this era of MLS and a team as big as New York City FC with as much profile, that it's just accepted that down the right side of the pitch, you're like, well, yeah, you got to be careful where you run because the grass might come up. Like, give me artificial turf any day over that shit. Can you imagine? Like,
there's like four.
I don't know. How does that possibly meet league standards?
It's like there's four different textures of grass. And maybe there's three if you count, but it's like four continuous points. I'm gonna get it wrong deciding which end is south and which end is north. But like just say from where the supporter's end was, the near side left corner, that's inside the home field, like that is in the infield, is one type of grass, and then they have the grass that's covering the base paths. And then mm-hmm. that is like, if you haven't seen a picture, and I posted some on my my Twitter feed, we did make an Instagram. I'm so sorry for everybody that expected we would have an Instagram.
Oh yeah, right.
I forgot
we were gonna do that.
But I posted some. That's like a quarter of the whole half. So like it is, it's the whole corner. Mm-hmm. And then the pattern that's the rest of the pitch. And then the far side left corner is also laid down turf to cover the part that goes into the track area between the edge of the grass and the wall in a baseball game. So that they can sort of Jenga in the rectangle. And you're right. I saw people slip on it. I saw Whitecaps runners, and I can't remember exactly who. I definitely saw a Whitecaps runner, like run onto the base path grass and then just bail.
Yeah. I'm amazed that it's not more of a safety concern, but you know, as we've seen throughout our time watching MLS, that sometimes you just get away with certain things. Whether or not they're right or make sense, there used to be a time where penalties in MLS were taken like they're taken in hockey, where you'd have a run-up from the halfway line, and people used to wear baseball hats on the field to keep the sun out of their eyes. It's just been all kinds of kooky shit, and sometimes you're just allowed to have grass that's not attached to anything on your baseball pitch in which your league-leading team is playing on.
But let's talk about the good stuff here for a moment.
All right.
And it's that we had a nice little group of people. I want to say, just because it's still so unique among pro sports, that the away fan model is so good, is the for an experience as a fan. I don't think that it's necessary to protect anyone, and there is kind of an element of security that's implied by it. But it's like, I can't imagine, and I'm trying to just eyeball how many people were there. I think it was like 20, 25. Like those same 25 people scattered around the stadium would have all had such a worse time. Like,
yeah,
like it was so fun. I met a listener there.
You met a listener.
Shout out to Kareem, who is seated in front of me and said, are you Andrew Bates? I recognize your laugh from your podcast.
Holy shit. I'm so glad that's how they know the podcast. And there it is.
Yeah, so shout out to Kareem Rahimtula, who is there. It was a wonderful element of the game. As stated, the good people of Third Rail had us over to the dugout across from Yankee Stadium. Other than the person, while we were like fording the river of the road between Yankee Stadium and dugout, other than the person that threw a water bottle at us, and the person that stole a scarf, which seems
like an odd way to antagonize an away team
outside of the venue. I was worried because I had heard stories about it before that if you're at an away game and you're walking and you don't have both your hands on your scarves, someone might like try
yank
to
yank it to just fucking throw it away and
yeah. Or whatever. Mm. And those were not the people that we were at. Those were not the Third Rail supporters people. Those were people on the open street.
Yeah. No, and like there's just douchebags everywhere.
Yeah.
In every city. But that's well established.
The Third Rail people were real, real great to us. Rox Fontaine was amazing. We had a really great time in the dugout. I was able to trade a scarf with a Third Rail person. Everybody was... I felt really good. It's so good to be around people who care about soccer and care about North American soccer and just want to enjoy it with each other and have a good time. Lots of good discussions. Yeah,
absolutely. I was very happy to hear that and see that. And really, truly, in this age, still in MLS, you got to stick together. Like, let's face it, we're a small and mighty band of people and... Mm. Of course, there's certain teams we love to hate and maybe some supporters groups that we're not the best of friends with. But ultimately, like, this is not Europe. There's not the same animosities in North American soccer. We're just glad that anybody comes. And I always feel a certain, you know, when I see away supporters, especially when they're coming from really far away.
Yeah.
I get New York being frustrated with us for killing down the game like we did and just time wasting, but that's what they do to every team, which is knocking the ball around. So I was like, it's nice to see us use a team's tactics against them. It's nice to play dirty a little bit and get something out of it.
The two fans though do not like each other. Both of them, the New York City people were very much like, there's only one team in New York. There can only be one team in New York, which you know, from their perspective, I understand. I think if you live in, you know, it creates that form of rivalry. And also, on the other hand, every person that was a Red Bull supporter that I met while I was walking around in New York with my Whitecaps jersey knew what it was, knew who we were playing, asked the score.
Which is great. That's a true soccer fan there.
I had somebody, I was on the Staten Island ferry, and I had somebody come up and put his hand on my arm and say, "How's my boy Felipe Martins doing?"
Oh, that's beautiful.
So I love that. I love that. I love that a lot.
I love that too. It's one of my partner still is sort of baffled by it, but anywhere you go in the world and you're wearing a soccer jersey, doesn't matter what the team is, somebody's going to come up to you and be like, even if they don't know, when I was in Cuba, I was wearing my the team I play on, I was just wearing the green jersey. We don't have a crest or anything. I just got a number on the back. And somebody, like, ran across the road to, like, embrace my hand. And they're like, "What team is this?" And I was like, "It's the team I play for." And they're like, "Are you a footballer?" I'm like, no. I just, like, I play on a team in Vancouver, Canada. Like, we're very bad. It's whatever. But he was still just, like... It's the universal symbol, regardless of where you go, somebody in a soccer jersey, unless it's Real Madrid or Man United, where you immediately have an affinity towards them and you're like, "Hey, we like the, yeah, we share a language."
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And we all know what it's like to just spend an inordinate amount of time cheering on a weird thing, often with a lot of heartbreak, which is why Real Madrid and Man United don't count.
What were your thoughts on the week's games? Because I just returned late last night. I have a spotty understanding of everything. I understand that Atlanta and Toronto stole, in my mind, what is the Whitecaps' signature scoreline this season of 2-2.
Yeah, so, I mean, I think we can kind of breeze through some of these games. There were some interesting results, some less interesting results. So, I'll have to go back to my notes here of what happened. This seems like forever ago. It also doesn't help that I just watched Toronto play last night. Overall, this was a fairly good game, but still shows that, and don't get me wrong, Atlanta is clearly the best team in the league, by far. I get that. I can accept that. I do feel like, I believe, where's my notes? Yeah. The penalty for Joseph Martinez is not a penalty. And it would just be amazing to see him. Like, I honestly think he could take a child out of the stands, shoot him in the head in the middle of the pitch, and nobody would say boo at home. Is that too much? Is that overstating it? Probably. Martinez is a fantastic player. He's clearly he's going to break the record for most goals in a season, and is a very special talent. Clearly, there's going to be some interest in him from other teams, not in MLS, in the offseason. And he continues to do damage. And for the most part, I'd say like 85% of his goals, you just go, what can you do but stand up and applaud and just go, this is a great player. And part of a great player's game is sometimes being the villain, but there's just so much flopping around. And that's fine. I actually don't blame him for it. But the refereeing when playing at home is just so, so kind to him in somebody so much as breathes on him or looks at him and he gets the call.
The issue...
And it's very consistent. That's the other part. It's not that it just happens once or twice. Every single game, two or three times he goes down and he always gets the call.
The issue or non-issue, depending on where he might go and in sort of what his... I'm not trying to say that he doesn't have talent, obviously. But I think that he benefits somewhat from being the center of chaos. And this yeah. isn't necessarily a comment on, like, yes, the referees know the referees. Yes, the referees give him favor, nor the referees don't give him favor. There are plenty of teams in the world where he could go where the referees give the team favor.
Yeah, absolutely. But ain't going to change just because you go to Europe.
Yeah. But I think that he benefits certainly from being in such a free-flowing, joyful, attacking system.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, like, I don't think he would... I don't think he would work as a sole striker in you know... in the same way in you know... like DC United or in Colorado or in somewhere like that. Not to insult either of those teams or to insult him, but it's like the next challenge is he operates in such an amazing position of being such a pivotal star that can be such a game changer, but also has very little pressure on him, I think. Would you agree with that, or do you think there's a lot of pressure on him to succeed?
No, I don't think there's that much pressure on him, and I agree that this is a trigger-happy Atlanta team, and we've talked about this before. This is still the key to unlocking Atlanta, and credit to Toronto for doing this somewhat, is that they just throw so much at you forward, and it's not like they have a bad back line or they're poor defensively or anything like that. But, you know, this is classic Spanish football of, you know, very quick passes in short, tight spaces that break teams open. And so they, in midfield, in the like true midfield, they like to control, they like to make quick passes that frees up their forward players to run wherever they want to. And MLS defenders are not used to that and don't know where to go. But as we saw, it also means that your defense then doesn't always have a lot to do, isn't always completely in the game. And even if they're good, as I do think Atlanta's back line is, they get a little sloppy and they can be beat. And, you know, Ricketts' 90th minute goal, I think, was a perfect example of that, is that Atlanta gets a little bit too comfortable, sits back, and the same type of precision and just gutsiness that is happening going forward doesn't necessarily translate to the back line. And those same people who are making all the great plays up the pitch are not coming back to defend. Mm. And that's what hurts them. Is Martinez, I can't remember the last time I saw him in his own defending third. And that's not his job, I get it. And he's being told not to do that. But, you know, Almiron as well. Almiron's great going forward, great in possession. Defensively is not amazing. And teams know that. And I think that as good as Atlanta's been, I think they have the potential to win MLS Cup. And I wouldn't be surprised if they did. They still remain a beatable team. And I think there's still 4, 5, 6 teams that could beat them in the final.
Mm-hmm. We
Well, sorry, I mean, I'm going to... 2 or 3 teams that could beat them in the final.
Narratively speaking, I know I feel like because we say this all the time, it's time to like there has to be a moment when we fucking shut up about the possibility that TFC could win. Or could he even make the playoffs? Yeah. However, they're in the position now. They're on 23 points. Impact is 5th in 29 points. In TFC has 2 games in hand on them. The narrative power of this is that they were a team that matched up together, and everybody wanted to see them together as the matchup. Since then, the fortunes have really turned. But you, in a game like this, you still see the Martinez Javinko tete-a-tete, and it ends as a 2-2 draw. So it's not going to shut up that question anytime soon, unfortunately, for people who think that this is a done deal. But it at least keeps some of the coals burning on this possible fire.
Possibly.
Possibly. Maybe. I mean, I think the Impact and the Revolution are still kind of you can't necessarily count on either of them. It's like if you go 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, it's like 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. It's 29, 29, 27, 23, 23, 23.
Yeah.
And the Impact have everyone's between 22 and 24 games. And I don't know that out of Montreal Impact, New England Revolution, Philadelphia Union, Orlando City FC, and Toronto FC, and Chicago Fire, that those teams, it's crazy that we're talking about 6 teams and 2 of them are in, and then those are the 6 teams. But I wouldn't say that none of those teams could make a change and get significantly better all of a sudden, and none of those teams couldn't take a dive and get significantly worse.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. As always, both conferences remain wide open, save for a couple of teams. But yeah, as we've seen, weird turnarounds can happen. But while we're on the subject of Atlanta, let's talk a little bit about the MLS All-Star game.
Yeah, well... I was able to watch. We talked about this last week. Was down on the concept of but I was packing for my trip, so I put it on the day after, like on delay the day after the first half, and then I watched the second half in the airport. And it's so weird. It was so weird. There were like on one hand nobody cared, but like. I also had fun. Like, it didn't matter, but I had fun. And there was a lot of things that influenced that. The fact that Brad Guzan, the very first thing that jumps out to everyone is the fact that they have a headpiece on Brad Guzan, the goalkeeper for MLS All-Stars and for Atlanta. And they're talking to him during the game. They are able to speak to him, and he's able to speak back. And it's the most, and I'm sorry because I know these people do every game and I know they're like, they're not bad broadcasters, but it's the most like milquetoast interview questions. Like, during the course of your career, how have you handled pressure?
I don't think you need to apologize for them. I like that in an interview afterwards, like, he took it in stride, but it was clear there was some convincing needed in that. Here's my thing. I think that it's kind of fine and hilarious in a way, mm-hmm. but also it completely defeats the purpose of there even being a game. Because it kind of, this is the problem with the Americanization of sports and the way America approaches sports, is that it just becomes a fucking festival for bullshit. It is not necessary.
Yes.
Soccer fans want to see good players play a good game. And they want to see a competitive game. They want to see some goals. They want to see some tackles. It doesn't really matter what the opposing team is, but to turn it into a circus, and like as a gimmick, I laughed at it, and I thought, okay, this is unique, right? Why not? Why not mic up a player on the pitch? And there's an element of that, of understanding what's actually going on the pitch for maybe players who don't, or people that don't understand, fans watching the game who are maybe learning. The trouble with that is it renders the whole thing completely ridiculous and like doesn't really matter, which everybody knew anyway. But it was basically MLS confirming it of like, why not just find people off, like pick people on the sidewalk to come in and play the MLS All-Stars and make that the gimmick? Like supporters groups play MLS All-Stars rather than like, why is Juventus even here?
Yep, absolutely.
Because no one really cares because their star player is not there. And then have such strict rules around the league of if a player, even if they're injured, it doesn't matter what your reasoning is, if a player is selected for MLS All-Star and they don't show up, they're suspended from league play, which makes no sense because it's not a league game. It wouldn't happen in any other championship circumstances. And it's so obvious that this is a farce that's used to drum up ticket sales for MLS.
Well, I made that exact point over on an article at Haller Magazine, whatahaller.com.
Oh, right, yeah. Perhaps that's where I got it from.
The Juventus players, sorry, Giorgio Chiellini, there's not as much like magnetism to the players that they brought, especially in the second half. So they aren't really in maybe this is a comment on Juventus or just my MLS hipsterdom that I'm not aware of Juventus and who's on Juventus, but it's like they weren't characters, and like some of the joy of, you know, watching this league every week and seeing players, seeing characters interact that you don't always get to see interact, right? Like to see like Diego Valeri play in Albertelli's was like, ooh, this is new.
Yeah. No, I liked your point exactly about that. It was more interesting to see these MLS rivals play together, which it was like basically Atlanta United and four other people for the first bit anyway, which is fine. I'm actually totally fine with that.
The fact that they had to make so many changes to get all the MLS players on the field made the game worse. It made it less entertaining because there was less of a rhythm. You had like, you know, Sebastian Giovinco in and out in 30 minutes or whatever, or however long that he actually ended up playing. And I don't know that it served like you could have had so much more and you could have done so much more because like there were so many interesting moments. I think with the mics, the two interesting moments were because Guzan's being coached by Tata Martino, as you said, pretty much LA, Atlanta and four other guys. Kind of griping, kind of just like being needled by the commentators and saying, yeah, there's no way I'm allowed to play a ball further than 20 yards. Was the first one that I thought was funny. And then the second one is when he got scored on. It's basically, he didn't say it because I think they have the ability to turn it on or off or whatever, but he basically he didn't say anything on the air, but he got scored on and immediately was like, fuck this.
Yeah.
We're done. We're done here. And didn't talk for the rest of the half, and then the feature did not return for the second half.
I know we said we didn't want to dwell too much on this game, but I think he did raise an important point that is also like MLS fans don't give a shit about mediocre European teams. And I know Ronaldo's just been signed or whatever, but if you want to talk about a retirement league, let's talk about the Italian league. There's a reason why he's going to the Italian league and not somewhere else. Still, greatest player ever. But he's clearly, this is a retirement league for him. A league he knows physically he can compete in. And I have no problem with that. Mm-hmm. But MLS fans are, I feel like the league has forgotten that we've invested ourselves in North American soccer, not necessarily in world soccer. And they don't have to be mutually exclusive. But the days, I think, are gone of seeing a kind of humdrum European side that nobody really knows or cares about come and play our best players. I think you actually said this, is like, why not the MLS All-Star Game and you have two MLS sides play each other? Like, you have a mix-up of the best players. Like, why not have a West versus East?
A lot of people think of the West versus East format is definitely one way to do it. I like conference-based, but more than, like, the NHL North American versus World format. I think that that's... I would much rather see a more sort of even split.
To me, it kind of smacks of last year's, like, weird... Vancouver Whitecaps versus Crystal Palace game that happened in the middle of the season. Like, I understand that it was a community group that brought that game to fruition, and kudos to them for doing it, and I watched the game, and it was kind of fun to watch, but it was fucking bizarre. There was no need for it. And it really, at the end of the day, you're like, Crystal Palace? Like,
yeah.
All right.
I like the idea, you have these ICC games, the International Champions Cup, and like I kind of like the idea a little better of having them like an European team play in a new game against a side that they're not familiar with. The Palace game was in 2016, and it was notable because it was Alphonso Davies' first goal.
Mm-hmm.
And because it was the linchpin around which that entire season fell apart, in my opinion.
Fair.
But there's some intrigue, but it's like just seeing who, like, I feel like the intrigue is not there for the MLS All-Star game. And these teams are around. I saw the headline of a piece and didn't read it about, whether or not ticket sales are being affected by the fact that we see these teams all the time now, and this is the ICC is like an accepted product that we know that you're going to see them like once a year somewhere in North America, but I don't think the whole point of bringing the David Beckhams etc. into the world of North American soccer is that you don't have to force people to look at it anymore by having this, like it's not bringing over Juventus to play in the All-Star game is not some like strange West versus East, like look at these people, you know, these unfamiliar people, TV is global. Everybody watches Juventus. Everyone watches, many people around the world watch MLS. And I just feel like it's you don't need to have that showcase for players around the world. And I highlighted this in the piece where it's like the commentators trying to hammer out on people why this game mattered or if this game mattered. And they talked to Tyler Adams and they were like, are you excited to showcase yourself off against big clubs that might be interested in buying you? And he's like, I want players in MLS to see me and know who I am and know what I do.
Yeah.
Poor
Alphonso Davies. They're like, which players are you eager to play with? And he's like, David Villa. And then he lists a bunch of players who were not playing in the match because of various injuries. He's like, Ibrahimovic. And they're like, he's not coming. Oh, well, David Villa. No, he's not here. Like, just...
Right, it's like, anyways, I feel like that's a good amount of time to talk about it, but...
Okay, but I do have one final correction, because I do feel like we can breeze through some of the League games. And I apologize if folks really want to hear the rundown on, you know, some of the strange ties that happened. But you did make a note that you said Atlanta's familiar foghorn.
Is it not a foghorn?
And then I was like, where do you think Atlanta is that they have foghorns? It's a diesel train whistle. That's why they do the rail spike thing, son.
I don't know anything about that. I don't know about trains. I don't know about trains.
And then I was like, maybe I shouldn't bring this up because it's going to expose me as a train nerd.
But, no, it's good. No, you're right. It's a train whistle. It's definitely a train whistle.
If it's not too late to go back and change that line, you know.
I already got my apologies around. I said Buffon retired. He just went to PSG. It's kind of the same.
You don't have to apologize for that. Same thing. That's where Neymar retired as well.
My apologies nonetheless. But there was a whole bunch of other games this week. What
were your yeah, so let's look around the league. We had a number of interesting draws that happened. A few sort of shock results. I feel like... You know, we don't really need to dissect Montreal versus DC, a 1-1 draw. These are both teams that have struggled but are starting to find form. It's good to see DC pick up a point, but otherwise I don't feel like there's much you can read into this game. Orlando-New England drew 3-3. This is another example of what happens when two teams that have terrible defense go up against each other, and Orlando still has the makings of a team that could actually win games if they could lock things up at the back. But for the first 35 minutes, this is just all New England just running at them and just such poor decisions and positional play from Orlando that you wonder how they even scraped a point out of this. But good for them for clawing it back and getting something out of it. The New England that we saw earlier in the season that had such character seems to have kind of disappeared, and I don't know how you feel about this, but my feeling is they need to regroup, find themselves again, and put their stamp on games a little bit more.
Yeah.
Defensively, they were atrocious, but Teal Bunbury just smoked them for the third goal. He's been fantastic for them. Both teams, I feel like, don't need to change a lot in terms of players. It's getting it right on the pitch and how they interact with each other.
Well, I don't know. Off the top of my head, I believe they played a little bit more often with two forwards. I'm seeing in this lineup for the game against Orlando that they played a 4-1-4-1. And perhaps having that, I don't know if it looks like it is a sweeper or if it looks sort of in practice more like a diamond or what. But I don't know if you think, okay, well, we're having some defensive issues, so let's commit another person back. But I do think that you know, if you think that it's taken something out of their their rhythm, I would switch it back.
Yeah. Kind of a messy game, and it's funny when you have a six-goal game and you go, eh. But I feel like some Orlando fans were happy at least the team fought and showed a little bit more character and got a point out of it.
I think one thing that I rediscovered by going to a game, because I unfortunately don't get to go to many games when you're in St. John. There's no St. John MLS team. Is just how important a result like this is to just the experience of being there. You know, like it doesn't matter how disappointing it is, really, if you do get a point to a certain degree, right? Because it's all in the 20 minutes that you spent being like, oh man, I hope you score something.
It's funny because last night at the Canadian Championship game, which I don't want to go into great detail about because surely most of our listeners might now have seen the game, and horrible last-minute own goal, and some terrible decision-making from the referee. But I was there with a friend of mine who I play soccer with but has never been to a game before. Mm. And it was so interesting to be at a game with somebody like that who his thought process at the end of it, he's like, "It was a great game."
Yeah.
And I'm kind of like, yeah, you know what? You're not wrong. Like, a terrible result, and I can analyze the crap out of this. But if you're new to the sport, or this is your first game, or... And I don't mean that in any sort of condescending way. It's just, it's nice to be at a game with somebody who's seeing it with fresh eyes to go, hey, it's 2-2. It's a 2-2 draw, which is technically 4-2 on away goals. But, like, it was fun to watch. And there were still entertaining moments, a bit of heartbreak. And that's part of it, right? Like, why would we continue if every time there's a bad player, a bad call, or heartbreak, we would have abandoned the sport long ago if we couldn't stomach that. That's part of being a soccer fan. So it is kind of great, as much as it's terrible, to share that experience with somebody who's new to the, like, oh, you can be winning and inexplicably, you're down a guy, you get the go-ahead goal, everything's going right, and then the last second of play, you score an own goal out of a mistake. That's part of it. That's part of being a soccer fan. And if you haven't experienced that, I kind of feel like you're not a real soccer fan. Well, the heartbreak comes with the elation.
You haven't experienced the true joys in Peaks and Valleys of soccer.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, you're still a real soccer fan, but you haven't experienced.
But it's worth seeking out the live experience. But the thing is it's a change in narrative, right? It's not just like, oh, there was lots of scoring in this game because I liked it, but the key is the lead changes, because you think, we're in the lead. Now we're not in the lead. We got to get the lead. We have the lead, or we're tied. Maybe we can get the lead. Oh, now we've conceded. Like it creates a easy to follow storyline that you can pin your emotions against, because you know what you're hoping for at every given point in time. If it's some of the issues, if you go, 70 minutes without scoring, is that nothing. It's hard sometimes to have a storyline signpost to hang your hat on.
Yeah, absolutely. Elsewhere around the league, notable results. Possibly the worst penalty call in league play this season was Colorado versus LA Galaxy.
All right, what went down?
Okay, now I'm checking because I'm like, tell me this was this week, and I didn't see something.
Nope, was this week.
I believe this is just like a... Of course, I have to watch the fucking MLS ad before anything happens. All right, let's talk about something else before I get to that.
Oh, sorry.
Real Salt Lake beats Chicago Fire 2-1, and RSL is still somehow in the mix of things, and Chicago just cannot buy a win. And then we're also roundly defeated in U.S. Open Cup play this week. We talked last week about what Chicago needs to do differently, but they seem like a team in crisis that's really not made any major moves to fill in the blanks. But for me, this still just comes down to, it's not just a bad back line. It's that they're not defending as a team. And they've just completely switched off. There's no chemistry between the players on the pitch. We know what Katai can do. We know what Basti can do. But my God, it's just like it's like watching a youth academy team. But youth academy teams at least have gone up through an academy with each other and have some sense of chemistry. Mm-hmm. It looks like every week they've picked a different lineup, even though it's the same players. It's like they've never played together before.
Yeah, the thing is, as when I was listing the teams in the East before that have a shot, Chicago is at the bottom of that list, and they have played the most games. And they're currently on the worst run of form. And it's tough because it's like, it maybe the addition, I don't know how the addition of Kellen Acosta has affected it. And perhaps the addition of Kellen Acosta has pushed it in the direction of sort of the lack of chemistry, right? Mm-hmm. Because, if you have players that are having difficulties, getting together, And then you have a player that really doesn't know what they're doing. Oh, Acosta's playing. Oh, I'm looking at the wrong sheet. Sorry. Was sent away. Acosta was sent. That's Dallas. Sorry. I still have the Rapids LA Galaxy thing open on my thing, on my screen. Oops.
Sorry.
Okay. Point I was going to make is that Chicago are in the worst position of that logjam in the East. They have not had a great run of form, and it's super competitive. So it's hard to know. You're absolutely right that they are looking like they're constantly trying to put stuff together. And like, I don't know what the immediate fix to it is in terms of coming up with a solution. You know, I'm looking at it. It's a 4-5-1. That seems unambitious. Unambitious to play, especially against RSL, who's like good. But I mean, I would always go into a game with RSL, like hoping that you would win.
And attacking it, like that's the thing to me. I feel like they kind of handed this one to them. And
now here's
it's so strange too. Like Nikolic has just fallen off the face of the earth. Like I know he's had goals this season, and overall he's been okay. But you know, from Golden Boot winner to just. His name's not even mentioned in this match. Did now he play? Like,
no, he didn't.
Oh, well, there you go.
And that's the thing. So here's the question. And let me take one moment to perhaps roll back the worry for just a second. You have talked before about the importance of benching a couple players to get them to wake up and get with the program.
Right.
In this case, you had Schweinsteiger, Hassler, Katai, and Nikolic were all starting on the bench. The first three entered as substitutions. Nikolic did not play.
Right.
Do you think that is a manifestation of that strategy? And if so, do you think it will be a six? You think it was? Do you think? The problem with this idea is of like, you know, if it's not working, bench some people, is that then you lose the game because you don't have your good players on necessarily. Or you can lose the game in that case.
I mean, I feel like at this point it's kind of a foregone conclusion for them that the season's kind of shot and they have nothing left to lose. I still think it's a good tactic to wake players up and go like, look, you know, I still think there's a lot of MLS teams, and maybe this is just my lack of familiarity with their sort of B teams with the players on the bench. But I do try to pay attention to that. But I still feel like there's a certain number of MLS teams that really rely on their starting 11 and aren't willing to have really dig into that squad depth. And so then there's a lack of competition for places. And then it also means that, you know, sometimes those players get their chances and they don't take them.
Mm-hmm.
And it does feel like you're playing your B team.
So MLS...
The reality is good MLS teams have a lot of depth and have 18, 19, 20 players that can get the job done. And, you know, for teams like Chicago... That's just not been the case. And when your starting 11 can't get the job done, you need to be damn sure that the people coming off the bench can get the job done. So I see this as a coaching fault, too. It's just, like, what's the game plan going into this?
So MLSsoccer.com suggests that it was an attempt to rest players in advance of the U.S. Open Cup semifinal, which they lost 3-0 to Philadelphia.
Yeah.
So maybe not necessarily the stern statement, but you're right about, you know, people not living up to the opportunities that when they have them in front of them.
Absolutely. Yeah. I don't know what else to really take away from this game other than that.
That's probably it. I saw the back half of York Red Bulls LAFC. I intended to go, but things piled on top of each other when I was in New York. Very sorry to the Red Bulls who had a spot for me. I apologize. But it was a good game for the Red Bulls, who were celebrating Bradley Wright Phillips' 100th goal as they won 2-1.
Yeah, a nice, another neat and tidy performance from them, and LAFC just buckling again under the pressure. And it is interesting to see the stark contrast of, there's been so much hype around expansion teams in the last 2 years, and certainly this year in LAFC, but have really, really struggled as of late. And then inexplicably somehow they brought in another striker to solve their problems in an area in which they do not need to solve problems, but sometimes you just need to make a deal. I get it. But very, very solid New York Red Bulls performance.
Yeah, absolutely. We've seen a lot of good stuff, as much as we talk about BWP and Kaku. Two goals from Royer is a great showing, including the one that finally put them ahead.
That's one of my other notes. It's like, he's just, Royer's so good. And this is where, you know, New York Red Bulls have been sort of up and down this season, but Royer is just there in the right spots. And never mind the fact that you have Bradley Wright Phillips. When you're scoring goals from midfield like that, with just such a talent like Royer, they're going to be obviously contenders for MLS Cup. And they have been before. The question is, can they string together enough consistent performances, and can they lock things up at the back to hold on to games? But it seems anyway like they're starting to do that.
I would suggest that at this time, despite the coaching change, Red Bulls seem strategically sound. They are able to pinpoint the way they should play against a given opponent and execute their game plan. I would say that they are occasionally overwhelmed. But I don't know if it's as much, outmatched, or outmatched is the wrong way to put it, but you know what I mean? Like, I don't think that they're solved as often as they are, like, just sort of overran.
I agree, and I think we've talked about that before, is that sometimes you got to throw everything at them, but it doesn't always work. Portland Timbers cruised to a fairly easy victory over Philadelphia, who later then cruised to a fairly easy victory over Chicago Fire. Not too much to say there, except that I believe it's 14 or 15 games now which Portland has not lost, so that's trouble for the Whitecaps going there away on the weekend.
God, that's
sneaky. For me, Portland is kind of the sleeper team this season. That's just, again, nobody's really been paying attention, but they've just very, very quietly been climbing the ladder. And then they brought back their forward, Lucas Milano, to help beef up things heading into the playoffs, which I think is a good move. Like, adding an attacking player when you're doing well is exactly what you want to do.
The three, there was it, sort of at the time that the CCL ended, there were three teams that we were talking about that, had rough starts and we thought could all, that we thought could perhaps upturn their form and soar up the table. And we've spent so much time looking at Seattle and Toronto, and Portland did it. Portland did it higher than anyone else's expectations, and they did it kind of while people weren't looking.
Yeah, and they were like the one team that really did it out of those.
Mm-hmm. So it's good. It'll be interesting for them to see if there will be some more success for them.
Yeah, but they're doing everything right now, and I'm. The objective part of me would like to see them make a late season run or a playoff run. Mm-hmm. Of course, the Whitecaps fan in me wants to see them crash and burn, but they've clearly very quickly adjusted to a new identity and a new look and a new way of doing things, and it's fun to watch. And clearly working for them.
I was looking at it. The Colorado LA Galaxy game didn't have a penalty in it.
It did not. I'm thinking of something else. You know what? I think I might have actually gone back too far, and I saw some older highlights, so I apologize.
As listeners will remember with my my trip through the NWSL, I've done that with a whole game before, so I don't fault you. I don't
sometimes you just have these false memories. I'm pretty sure sir saw a guy get fouled at the top of the box, but he just tripped himself and there's no contact. It's well, MLS. That can happen a lot.
In that game, Kellen Acosta, who I was earlier, who for a moment there I thought was playing for Chicago for some reason, was the first of two scorers as Colorado overcame LA Galaxy by a score of 2-1.
Yeah, I mean, another one where I kind of go like a great result for Colorado, and they're going to bounce up and down this season. I think that's just accepted. And, you know, I really don't feel like they're going to scrape into the playoffs, but it's still a huge 3 points to pick up against a team that's kind of wounded. But on another day, I think this could have been LA Galaxy's game.
Can we please get the all-star headset on Tim Howard?
Oh, my God. The poor dude. We know he's made mistakes this season, but yeah, just what a thankless job in Colorado. However, they got the 3 points. To me, the best game of this week, just for sheer interesting factor, which felt like a pregame season game, is Houston versus Sporting KC. Houston loses 1-0. I believe they go down a man in the 22nd minute or so. But this was just primo MLS team falling apart at all. Oh, 14th minute at the seams. And I sent you a message. We don't always. So just as a bit of background, you know, of course, Andrew and I talk about the games between us doing podcasts, but not a lot. There's not usually a lot of conversation between us doing the podcasts because we want to actually appear fresh and talk about things that are going on in real time. But this one, it was kind of hard to ignore. Funimore gets a straight red card in the 14th minute, which I felt like we've seen the hits to the head get red carded so many times. Yes, there's an argument to be made for it not being a red, but I think it's an okay call. At the half, the coach, Wilmer Cabrera, gets sent off for arguing in the tunnel. And then you'd think that everything just came apart at the seams, but it was actually not until like deep in the 27 minutes of stoppage time or whatever it was in this game that Seren and Elise were both shown red cards. So we ended up with a total of 4 Houston Dynamo personnel being shown off in this match, and SKC still just 1-1. I don't know where to place this in the annals of MLS history or this season, but entertaining.
Well, we had that game. Okay, so the two games that it reminds me of is that game, the 1-1 draw a week or two ago where everything happened except goals.
Yeah.
And also the lamentable Sporting Kansas City 6 Whitecaps nothing. Continuous red card factory. Except that this is the perfect marriage of both of them, because earlier we were talking about signposts, like, you know, narrative signposts. And here you have something on the 14th minute, you have something at halftime, you have a goal on 74, and then you have everything happening in extra time. You have 90 plus 10.
Yeah. And truly, you know, as bad as SKC has all of a sudden become in the last 5 or 6 games, Houston just royally shits the bed on this. And I've looked at it, and I don't know if it's just because I find it hilarious. I think there's a clear argument to be made for every single one being a red card. Except for, of course, what we don't see with the manager in the tunnel. But the funny thing is just a... Sorry. To me, it's a symptom of a larger problem, which we've talked about with Houston. It's just discipline and focus is just completely gone out the window. And once it happens to the coach, then you're really in trouble, and it trickles down.
The two things that I find that funny are that the perennial sort of baseball example of an ejection is to say, is for a manager to get sent off for no reason to fire up the team and to like scream at the referee, but really the words that are coming out of his mouth are like, "Hey, what did you have for dinner last night?" or whatever, right? Like, right. Like that idea of doing it as pure theatrics. So like doing it in the tunnel robs all of the theatrics of getting sent off.
No, and but I think also, he was genuinely just butthurt about the first red card, which I feel like is, it's not like crazy malicious, but you're going in with your arm into a person's face.
Yeah.
We know in MLS that can happen. I get it. As a coach, I'd be furious too. But to just pick away at the referees like that, I like that. We didn't see what happened, but.
Also, where do you get sent off to when everyone's going to the dressing room?
I think you just told you can't come back.
Like, can you imagine? It's like all 11 players come into the dressing room and like, you know, the coach hangs back for a second to talk to the referee. And then it's like 5 minutes, 10 minutes. Where's the coach?
Been a good halftime speech.
Silence speaks volumes.
It does indeed. Other results around the league, Seattle beat Minnesota 2-1. Not too much in that one, except now I'm going to go to it because I think maybe that one might have had a weird penalty call. But another interesting one was that FC Dallas, who's been faltering recently, and we've talked about this, San Jose doesn't just get a win, they get a big win against Dallas.
Yeah.
This one was... one of the ones that I didn't, one of the games I wouldn't necessarily at the beginning of the weekend gone, oh, I need to see what the result of this is. But it's a little surprising, no?
Yeah, absolutely. Especially because, like, I think that the form is completely different when you look at the two teams, because Dallas is leading the West. They've got great, like, you know, they've got great balance. They know what works for them. It has seemed like, if nothing else, they have no idea what works for them in San Jose. And none of them were Houston?
It was a bit of Vaco. Vaco magic happened in this game.
Vaco
all of a sudden came to life. I think there was only actually 7 people at this game as well. Dallas continues to just, I don't know if it's just the angle of the cameras, but there's just so few people at these games. It's just a little depressing.
17, it looks like it was 17-282.
But they give up a really stupid early goal where the goalkeeper's just unnecessarily far out of the goal and the defenders don't seem to know how to recover. And San Jose basically just... Vaco does a good job to get past the defenders and Hedges tries to stand him up. But everybody's just jogging back, the goalkeeper's way out, and nobody expects him to take a shot, except he's got a very clear wide open shot at the net.
Yeah, that's weird. Look at what timing. What was it? That was on 19. Do you think they weren't settled at that time?
It's possible, and I mean, it's strange to say because normally the thing we'd talk about with Dallas is the fact that their defense is usually a little bit more settled, but as we've seen over the last few games, it's taken them a really long time to get into matches, and then it just seems kind of all too late. And really, I thought the weird thing about this game was it was like watching San Jose play against themselves. There's just a total lack of heart and commitment to certain things and a lack of sharpness or vision. And San Jose capitalized on that to win the game. However, my player of the week goes to Mr. Tarbell, and I love having a goalkeeper as my player of the week. He makes two very quick, crucial saves early into the second half that really do keep San Jose in this.
Yeah, Tarbell's been good for a couple weeks. So it's nice to see that result in changes. Oh, I never knew that his name was, that Vaca wasn't his actual name.
You learn something. Yeah, that's confusing. Kalashi, isn't it? Kalashi? Yes.
There's also a Barco in the league, so it's confusing.
Well, I believe last year he went by Kaivalashi. So.
Yeah, it's great to see Tarvel get the result. I don't know how great it is to see the rest of the whole deal. Because it's not, you don't want to really reward San Jose for how bad this whole deal has been. But
it's a really poor game from Dallas, and you're really starting to feel like they need to come up. It's amazing that they're at the top of the league because they've just been so switched off recently. And, you know, it's interesting because when you look at the East, okay, you get Atlanta, New York Red Bulls, New York City FC, Columbus Crew. You're like, okay, sure, top four teams make sense. Those are the teams that have consistently been performing. In the West, you've got FC Dallas, Portland Timbers. Portland Timbers had a very poor start to their season, but have obviously shown consistency recently. SKC, another team that's faltered. LAFC, that's continued to falter. LA Galaxy, that's continued to falter. Real Salt Lake, that's continued to falter. And it just goes down of teams that can't quite get their shit together in the West.
The year that Portland got in sixth, or got in, I don't know if it was exactly sixth, I think we're talking about 2015 here, in one MLS Cup, got really bolstered MLS's reputation as a league where it doesn't matter where you qualify from the playoffs. And sometimes people groused, you know, does that inflate teams who appear better than they are because they weren't able to get as many points in the regular season? But the reverse is also true, that the teams, it's not just that the teams at the bottom end of the playoff picture can perform on any given night. It's that the teams in the top end all have like weaknesses and occasionally can appear beatable.
Yeah, and I think ultimately that's what keeps fans still interested in the league, is that there's very few teams. I don't think there really is any team right now that feels like that there's just no way that you could beat them. And we've seen teams like Minnesota, like Colorado, like Vancouver, like Montreal get results against big, big clubs that seem to be doing everything right, that you go, at the end of the day, once we're all in the playoffs, this is going to get real interesting. Mm-hmm.
What else do we have on the slate? Or what else do we have on the slate from that week's games?
Not a ton. We got Minnesota losing to Seattle, which there wasn't too much in that one. That was kind of a close battle, but
that's tough. Minnesota's been
Will
on a good
Bruins
run of
form. Back in.
Sorry, we collided there. What were you going to say?
I was just going to say, Will Bruin's back in form and doing stuff for Seattle. They're still looking a little shaky at times, but another crucial 3 points for them. And again, just Seattle's just finding ways to win games. And I know that sounds very like a manager's talk at the end of a press conference, but they're somehow finding a way to make it work for them. They haven't been playing that well, but another crucial 3 points. And this is what so many teams around the league need to start figuring out better, is just hitting their stride and finding a way back into a game. Even if there's not much in it, doesn't matter who the competition is, but you got to go for the 3 points.
Does this undercut Minnesota's momentum?
I really don't feel like it does, considering Seattle's kind of up and down season. And, you know, looking at where Minnesota's positioned, they've been a little bit all over the map, but I still feel like this is such an improvement over last season that, you know, at 28 points, another 3 points, depending on how things go for the Whitecaps and Sounders, they could all of a sudden be over the line. And again, the teams above them have faltered. So the biggest thing for all teams in the West right now is to just try to win as many games as they can. And quite obviously, that's always the goal. But it's pretty tight between them. And so, okay, Seattle's at 29, now Minnesota's at 28. Which also meant that previously Seattle was behind them. So there's still some leapfrog going on in the West.
You got to collect those points. I think that's it for this week. I don't see anything else from the 84, from 84 or 85. We also had on the Wednesday, we had the two U.S. Open Cup games, the final of that. We don't talk about that much because, you know, America is
no one cares. Sorry.
America is not our bailiwick, but Philadelphia and Houston will be the finalists. After Philadelphia trounced Chicago 3-0 in Houston 1 on penalties over LAFC in their opening attempt.
Okay, so if we're going to call this one, who do you pick?
I would say it's tough because these are both two teams who are where the ceilings in floors have been high over the last couple of seasons. But I think Philadelphia is on the better form.
I agree. I think this could be a nice little push for Philadelphia. And I think they could tidily win this cup. Mm-hmm. And I think it would do really good things for their season. They're just below the cutoff line for playoffs. New England's been faltering. Montreal's been on a bit of a surge, but not much. I would love to see Philadelphia just make the playoffs and see what they can do. I don't think they'll go far. But in terms of teams in the East that are below the playoff line right now, mm-hmm. they've shown that they want it the most. And they've been unlucky. Defending's not been great at many points. But I'd be very, very happy to see them earn that final playoff spot in sixth place in the Eastern Conference and just see what they can do. Because as up and down as they can be, I like the unpredictability of them. And every once in a while, they just come in and get a 3-0 result after just blowing it in the league.
I think that, you know, in the time that Philadelphia has been in the league, I think that as much as, you know, we grow so at the US Open Cup, getting a little success is something that will really help the growth of their club. And I do think that MLS clubs should take it seriously because it is a competition with some history. It's basically what DC has had to its name for the last 8 years. But it would be nice to see them get some silverware.
I agree, and could be a big surge for them going forward in their playoff push.
Speaking of finals of domestic cup competitions, mm-hmm. we did breeze across it briefly, but the Canadian Championship final just started. It was 2-2. As you said, it kind of goes back and forth, and then the Whitecaps go up 2-2 and through the Hurtado goal, and then a crazy last minute own goal gets the two sides level with. I don't think of it as 4-2. I just take the away goals as like a separate tiebreaker. Right, like that. I don't think of it that way, but I want to think good things. Weird stuff keeps happening in the Whitecaps. You get all MLS teams, you know, at near the end of games and the end of halves.
Yeah, I think actually. So I was at the game.
Yeah,
and obviously, that's going to color the way that I come at this. For me, I think that there is an argument to be made, and I'm sorry, or this is a red card for Felipe.
Yeah.
I think it's soft. I think there's a reason for it. However, as a referee, you got to know you're killing the game in the 25th minute, if it was even that, in a cup competition. There's no review had. He just automatically goes to his pocket, decides it's a red. I forget the player that he fouled. He posted a picture on Instagram, and there's a big old cleat-sized tear down the back of his leg. He got him. For sure he got him. Mm-hmm. I don't think that was necessarily the question, but he goes to ground. He gets a bit of the ball. He studs up on one foot. So there's some disagreement there. That's a call that can go either way. But it's a huge, huge call to make. And Gender doesn't exactly have a great reputation for his red card calls. For me, the thing that's more infuriating is that the play leading up to the second goal for Toronto, which was an own goal from us, is that Hurtado is fouled pretty viciously. That's not called. And so it's such a bad call that everybody kind of stops. And Altidore's able to run into space and just smack it into the box. And Henry just makes an absolute fucking nightmare of a decision to try to head it out. A low, quick cross into the box, decides to head it. It's atrocious decision-making. But I do understand that, like, the players are also... Hurtado gets cleaned out, and that's a foul, and play should have stopped. That being said, the objective part of me is just, as we always say, play to the whistle. It's atrocious decision-making from the center back. I've never felt more sorry for a defender in my life. I've been there. It sucks. He could barely pick himself up off the pitch and couldn't wait to get out of there. He knew that he lost us this championship, and I really do feel that way. Not to put everything on Henry, this series is over. And bless Vancouver for being the underdogs. Bless them for putting in the fight to be a man down and get the amazing Hurtado goal and go up 2-1. It's 4-2 going into Toronto. They can see this one out. This is not our year again. And that's my assessment of it. Do I sound salty?
Well, I mean, like, this is a sort of thing where I think that also my first response, while I was, you know, it's a little bit of an apologetic one, but is that, you know, you put so much pressure on till the end of the game that, like, eventually you're going to make some blockhead decisions like this.
Yeah.
When you have to defend and soak up pressure. There's really no defending the idea of trying to head the ball at the ground. But you're right. People need to play to the whistle. I think there was a certain amount of fatigue that played into all that. I would like to hope that there is some sort of success because, you know, Toronto has shown itself as a beatable team this season, but fingers crossed. Sorry about your boy Felipe Martins, guy on the Staten Island Ferry. You can't apologize. You know, it's just tough. It's tough when a player makes a mistake like that because, you know, Hurtado had such a good game. The other thing with the Whitecaps that I wanted to talk about, just because I kind of had I've been seeing the furor over the Kendall Waston in Southsiders deal, which is that the Southsiders issued a statement in which people had raised the concern to them that it looks like Kendall Waston had his sleeve over his pride-colored armband during the course of the game. And I guess from reading the statement, they had asked that whether or not this was an accident and concluded that it was kind of on Kendall Waston to demonstrate his support, perhaps with a donation, and people thought that this was a hasty decision. There was another statement where people are trying to explain it, and since the board has met and tried to talk about how they discuss these things, Waston posted an Instagram post where he said, "You know, are you serious? Yes, you." The point that with a picture of him with his sleeve tucked into his non-pride armband, I must also note. The thing that I wanted to say is, a lot of people have wondered, is this hasty? Is it not? Is it a bad example of activism? Is it not? I think that as a supporter, it would worry me if I thought that the captain was not supporting of the cause on Pride Night, and I would rely on my supporters association to follow through on those concerns. Yeah. And I believe that if you can think that they overstepped their bounds, whatever the bounds of a supporters society or a supporters association is supposed to be, I think that the number one thing that you should expect of them is that they respond to the concerns of supporters. And if you believe that Instagram post is a refuting of the suggestion, then I'm glad that it got addressed, because if I, you know, was sitting in the stands and all of a sudden, you know, started to notice and believe that was an issue, that would ruin my night. And that's I think that answering those questions is what supporters clubs are for.
Absolutely. And I also think it was actually a pretty measured response from the Southsiders. And I mean, I know the crazy thing is, of course, all this shit happens over Twitter. And so people feel like there's an actual dialogue going on when there's not.
I haven't talked. I want to make clear, I haven't talked to anybody. I've only seen things from Twitter. And I haven't waited on Twitter.
As have I. But I thought it was a very calm, measured response from the Southsiders, which was not saying, you know, oh, this player needs to change the whole thing or whatever. But like, we live in a reality where it's okay to point out wrong-mindedness or to ask questions of people who seem to hold those ideas. And so it's not saying, oh, you can't do that or you must believe in these causes. It's to say, look, our club does, our supporters groups do. And if you don't, we've got questions for you, and you will be held accountable for your answers. That's fine. You can still accept other points of view.
A lot of people were saying
this is the Vancouver Whitecaps have struggled with toxic masculinity. We've had numerous problems, numerous problem players. It's absolutely okay to go after a player and ask questions, especially going like, maybe reconsider, maybe make a donation.
And he didn't have to wear the armband that evening either. I think a lot of people have raised that.
Exactly. Give it to fucking Tybert, a player who can actually... Okay, well, all right. I'm getting emotional on that thing. But honestly, as a fan, I just go, I'm done. Mm-hmm. If a player doesn't have an adequate response, and that's their immature response to, I think, a fairly mature call to just reconsider or at least explain... And then to be like, fuck you guys.
It's like, we don't know.
Really? Yeah, really? Well, you're getting paid almost $400,000 a year, and you're the captain of our team, and it's a league-wide policy. So if you can't reconsider that, then yeah, really, that's what we're talking about.
We don't know. We don't know. What his deal is. But the fact is, I wanted to just put that up there because a lot of people are, you know, there's a lot of voices that say that this was, don't necessarily the TikTok on how decisions were made and how a statement was written and who in the team was talked to is not anything that I know about, but I think that this is definitely within the remit of a supporters association to take care of.
Sure. And whoever wrote it, whether they acted alone or the other people, I still applaud them for it. It's good questions to ask. We live in a time where people should be asking questions about how we show up and what we believe in. And it's okay to ask questions, and it's okay to ask people to do better. Nobody said, he can't be our captain, he can't play for us anymore. It was a, maybe re-examine this, give us some answers. And when it's met with hostility, what does that tell you about the person?
As we record this on Thursday, it is the deadline day. Tony Chani was waived, and Kevin Ellis were waived from the Chicago Fire, former Whitecap Chani. You've mentioned Lucas Milano.
Mm-hmm.
The Whitecaps said goodbye to Bernie Abini, who is always, I think, a little bit of an experiment. The Timbers got Jorge Villafania off of LA Galaxy, which mm-hmm. I think is a rare. Oh, I guess he's a defender. I can't believe LA Galaxy is getting rid of a defender. You wouldn't think that they were that.
What have they got to lose?
Former Arsenal man Bakary Sagna is
thank
on his way to Impact.
This was just I heard about the rumor of this, but I didn't see it was a done deal.
Yes,
I always thought Sagna was just such a good player for Arsenal. Those of you who don't know, I support Arsenal in England, and obviously had stints at Man City as well as other the international French team as well. I know he's an older player, but this is another one of those ones where you go, this is a high pedigree of player and could hugely improve Montreal Impact. And I also kind of just like that they're like, fuck it, we're signing players that can speak French. And why not? Like, it makes perfect sense. Like, I'm not even trying to make a joke. I love that Montreal's just like, yeah, that's our system. It's very Montreal, it's very Quebecois, and why the hell not? And Sagna's a great player and a great signing for them. And they also picked up Michael Azira as well.
They also picked up, and I did not see this, and I think that this is actually big news, Quincy Ameriquois.
Yeah.
I didn't see that, but I think that Ameriquois has been around for a while, and I have to check his age. But, as much as, you know, San Jose have not had the most luck, I do think that he's a player that can be the foundation of a great team.
Absolutely. And especially, I think, Domodoro going to San Jose. I think this is one of the few trades I've seen where I go, that makes sense. Both these players need a switch up. Both players are good and comparable, but have struggled with the current teams they're in. And Oduro to... Am I getting this trade right? Oduro to
Montreal for...
To Montreal, yeah.
For America.
I think it's a good bit of business for both teams.
Yeah. The other one is Bill Hamid, who I first was aware of as a Puerto Rico Islanders goalkeeper, has returned to DC United, which spells terrible things for your friend and mine, David Osted.
It does, and considering, I forget the name of their backup keeper, but I feel like you've got three pretty decent picks now mm-hmm. for DC United. The interesting thing here is I honestly feel like goalkeeping is not the problem, but I think this is probably also a bit of business that Bill Hamid is a little bit older, he's got experience, he's unhappy where he was in Denmark, and they probably got him for a bit of a song, so why not carry three good goalkeepers for not that much money?
Mm-hmm. TFC gets a Tigres forward on loan, or a Tigre? No, yeah, the CA Tigre, not Tigres.
I was gonna say, where did they scout him from? Right, the Argentine guy.
Yes,
Janssen,
Lucas Janssen. Which is it's an interesting time. It's an interesting time to get more forwards, but whatever.
Sure.
Now that Altidore is back. And I think I think those are the key moves.
The only other one I was going to mention was Vitas from Portland to DC as well. And it's very clear that that DC is not afraid to be spending some money and bringing in, but also I think making smart moves here. Like, they're not overspending. Even for Rooney, they didn't really overspend. But they've got the new stadium and they're wanting to build up their team, and I feel like they've done good, and I think it's, yeah, they're not likely to make the playoffs, but they've signaled their intentions for next year.
The only other amazing thing that happened is that Seattle signed a player named Brad Smith. and former Seattle player Brad Evans, who was a sorrowful departure from fans who were sad to see him go, and I think he was sad to leave, which leaves certain elements in the front office as the only people that were happy about it. Brad Evans tweeted, "You can't just get a fake Brad and expect everything to just be fine again."
Fair. Ain't no love sometimes.
I wasn't expecting this level of Brad. Of Brad.
The Brad feud.
Yeah. Where can we find you online?
You can find me online lamenting the recent Whitecaps loss, or sort of loss, or own goal, or whatever. And, oh, okay, that's too depressing. You can find me online on Twitter at ThatsSoMLS. Probably one day on Instagram at the same handle, unless you steal it. And
don't
where can
steal
we find
it.
You
don't
online?
Don't take it. Now I gotta do it.
Can you tell this is another late night show? I mean, it's much later for you, but.
You can find me at. Team Bates on Twitter. How did I forget my own Twitter name for a minute there? www.team-bates.com. I am an editor at Howler Magazine, and you can also read my writing at whatahowler.com. And you can find this podcast at thatsomls.com and on iTunes and wherever good podcasts are located.
Indeed.
Be like Kareem.
Sorry?
Be like Kareem. There are our loyal listener there who is in New York.
Yeah, sorry, I had a moment. I was like, "What? What's happening?" Yes, I'm just so glad there's a listener. Until next time, don't get yourself and three of your players sent off.
Absolutely not.